Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, ATJ, bring it back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for another week. This has been moving week, Molly. My name is Monty, by the way. The next voice you're going to hear is Molly. We talk Dream Team and Supercoach on this show, Fantasy Football. And I feel like this week, Molly, has been... they talk about, I think it's Sunday at Augusta at the Masters, the US Masters Golf. They talk about Sunday as moving day. And I feel like this week was moving week. I didn't end up actually moving very much, but I've heard a lot of other people did. So are you one of the ones who moved up or down?
I think I did. I think I moved down too much to, yes. No, I actually stayed about the same in Dream Team. Supercoach actually went down, but yeah, I'm going so badly. It's not really interesting to talk about.
Well, one interesting piece of team-related news I can tell you is that my beloved actually got 135 in the cosmos this week. And her trade-ins are you ready for this, Molly? Her first trade-in was Jed Adcock, because he has a name that sounds like a body part. And his second one, her second one was Trent McKenzie, because she liked the fact that his nickname is The Cannon. And that's pretty much the level of the trading that she's been going with this year. She's got Cox and Swallow and a bunch of other similar type names. Side Bottom she had, although she dropped him. So, yes, a lot of wee and poo jokes and bum jokes in her team. I'm not talking about Buddy Franklin there, but yes, she almost had Cyril, but I talked her out of that one. But anyway, she has jumped up, I think, from about 22,000 to 6,000 in the space of 1 week. So I'm sure there are plenty of other stories like that this week, because if you got on the wrong players, you're going to drop like a stone. And if you managed to avoid all the pitfalls this week, you would have risen like my Wags side did. So I suppose we should get right into it. Before we start, we are going to do... I'm not sure we can actually do... a draw of a Capstar cap, because I'm not seeing a whole lot of activity in the chat at this stage, apart from Heavy, who has already won a cap. I might have to do that on the forums.
Does that mean I get the cap?
No, it doesn't. I think I'll do that on the forums this week. I've got a couple of caps to give away, so we'll do that on the forums. Right, that means we should get into the round review. I must say, having obviously, as I do every week, Molly, watching all nine games, I was very impressed with my own effort this week in the purple name game curse. We're going to talk a fair bit about curses this week, Molly. I'm sure you'll get to that to the Monty Dream Team curse in as we get to the Hawthorn game later on. But I think it was 7 out of 9 of the players who I chose for the purple name game had scores of around 50 or even below this week. So I was very happy with my performance there, because I deliberately chose important players, and you know, there were no duds amongst them, and they all put in fairly poor performances. But I suppose we haven't got that long a list of players to talk about this week, because it does seem to me, at least, that there are two obvious trade-ins, and the first one we're going to talk about is from the Collingwood St Kilda game, and that's Dale Thomas. Of course, he's coming off that injury-interrupted pre-season, and his score is fairly, I suppose, depressed because of the vest he was wearing in the first game or so. But he's saluted with a 121 in Dream Team and 150 in Supercoach. I feel like this week is the week to get on him, because his draw is pretty much is okay from here on in, I think. And his break even is at the right point. I think he can break that this week. I feel like this week is the week to get Thomas in, especially given that he does have forward eligibility, Molly.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that now, and as you say, he put in a really good performance, played down back. He's had a poor start to the season, but that's really turned around. You know, he's at the bottom of the roller coaster. He's averaging 70. His implied average is 80, 400,000. That's a good forward option, even as a centre option. with thoughts of future moving him into the forward line could work out this week, depending on where you have guys to trade out.
Now, the reason that his price is depressed, because, of course, he's played rounds 3 through 6. So round 4 was the week where he got subbed. He was given the green vest, subbed on in the third quarter and managed a 35. So that is rotating out of his price this week. So you take that number out, and his average over the course of the season looks a lot better. But as you say, it was a role change that really took the eye this week. I mean, Collingwood have struggled for rebound for speed amongst their rebounders. Obviously, Heath Shaw has been the main one since the retirement of Leon Davis. And I heard a Pies supporter ringing up ESPN, I think it was last week. They're still moaning that they haven't really got anyone to replace Leon Davis since he retired. And maybe Dale Thomas is the answer, Molly. Maybe a bit like Nick Del Santo a year or two ago, a bit like Sam Mitchell, I think it was, last year, getting a midfielder to play off the halfback flank to provide that run and the quality of disposal by foot especially. I mean, obviously, if he keeps on doing that role, I suppose he would get forward tag, but he's shown that he can break tags in midfield. Obviously, it's probably a bit different coming off the halfback line because it's a bit of a different role, but certainly in the in terms of the role, you could say if he manages to keep that role, he's going to be scoring not 120s every week, but you'd certainly say that he's not going to suffer, I don't think, given that his best year, he's already managed 100 year in the, was that the premiership year? I think was 2011 the premiership year for Collingwood, or was that the year before?
2011 was the Cats,
That was the year where he did manage across 19 games to average 103 in Dream Team and 109 in Supercoach. So he has shown he can do that in the midfield, but certainly in that sort of role off the halfback flank, he obviously in that game he managed to show that he had the potential to go even higher. So, I mean, given that he's priced at, what's that, low 80s in both, or 83 in Dream Team and 86 in Supercoach, I think this is a bit of a no-brainer, Molly, is what I'm trying to get to.
Right, yeah, and I mean, I think what we often, I often talked about in the past was reasons for, you know, these performances, and he was coming off an injury interrupted, I think it was end of the preseason as much as anything, and then, you know, came up against two good sides in Richmond coming out. So you got a couple of tricky matches coming up, but then it sort of eases off into the bye and out of the bye for them. So, you know, I think there's a lot to like about Thomas, especially as you say, as a forward to come in this week.
Right, also at Collingwood, I can't recall if we've actually talked about him before this week. I might have mentioned him once, I think, in the show prior to this week. But Harry O'Brien has put up another big score. He's had 4 big scores out of 6 now. The other two are around 50, so he's actually had 2 of those in the last 4 weeks. So it's 100, 80, 47 against Hawthorn, 91, 52 against Essendon, and then 125 in this just recent game. So his standard deviation is pretty high, but obviously the move of Brent McCaffrey to the back line prevents the need in that Collingwood structure, Molly, for O'Brien to play back, which is what he had to do in several of those games to produce those low scores. So obviously Buckley has seen that he's obviously decided that if he can possibly help it, he doesn't want O'Brien to be a defender. He wants to be him to be the outside runner and the distributor from halfback to half forward. So, I mean, those 2 games, I feel, the Hawthorn game and the Essendon game, were where there were injuries mid-game and O'Brien had to go back and cover. But I feel like, especially with the move of McCaffrey into the back line, that, I mean, assuming that those injuries don't keep on happening every other week, as has in the last month, that O'Brien is going to settle down his scoring to be much more like the sort of 90s that he gets when he is playing pure wing. So given that he is classified as a backman, I like his scoring ceiling a lot better than a lot of those priced at around where he is, which is about 73 in Dream Team and 78 in Supercoach. I still think he's underpriced by possibly even 15 or maybe even 20 at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's right. And you know, that change of role has been all important for him. But, you know, being a back gives him a little bit more freedom than it does if he was a midfielder or alike. He's been a bit up and down, but most backs are like that anyway. But true. His two low scores came against the good teams where he's had to play some defense and not just run around. He's got Fremantle, Geelong and Sydney to come, but then the draw opens up. So I guess I don't see him as one of the top backs, and therefore, you know, picking him up is still pretty questionable, I think. I would probably steer elsewhere.
All right. Well, I think he's going to average 80 at least, but it's a matter of whether he can push that 80 up towards 85 or 90, because, of course, you probably need 90 to get into the top six back, so that's a still an open question. But assuming that injuries don't hit every other week like they have in the last month, as I said, so he's got a shot anyway. On the St Kilda side of that game, Molly, the player who's on the bubble from St Kilda this week is Josh Saunders. He got the green vest in the first week and scored about 40, and he did not get the green vest, played a full game in the second week and also scored about 40. So I feel like we're going to be mentioning the main candidate on the bubble in the back line, so I don't feel like Saunders is it at this stage.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, he might pop up and have a good game, but yeah, no, St Kilda are struggling a little bit. And, yeah, I don't think he's a good pickup at this stage. They're being a team that was in the bottom eight last year, they're starting to come up to their hard part of the draw now. Yep. So I'd avoid.
I mean, it might be tempting to make the extra 50, 55 grand you'd be making to go him over Nick Vlosten, who we'll be talking about later. But I feel like Vlosten has a bigger upside, will make more money, and obviously is much more of a starting option than Saunders is.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about Boston after, so let's leave that for later on.
All right, on to the Essendon and GWS game. Now, obviously, Brent Stanton was the huge story here, of course, getting subbed off with that injury at halftime, but he almost managed to outscore Jerb Watson, who played a full game, Molly. So I suppose everyone knows about Stanton. He's obviously going to be missing this week and possibly the week after, so he'll probably be traded out, given the preponderance of trades we have this year. But I suppose the question is for Watson. I mean, we know that it's not necessarily the case that premiums will score that much more than their average against the expansion teams like GWS. It is more your average players who lift their game. David Myers being the big case in point in that game. Alwyn Davey also got a lot of cheap points in that game. But Watson, I mean, you wouldn't expect a player to get tagged out of it. I mean, is this something that his owners need to be worried about? He's been tagged out of two of the six games so far. He obviously copped Crowley in round three. I actually need to look that up because I have a sneaking suspicion it might have been... No, it was De Boer. It was De Boer who got him in round three. So he has been tagged out of two games out of the six, but obviously the other four he has run, you know, he's scored tons in both competitions. Is this something you just need to ride out with Watson, or is this something that you're worried about? I mean, is he going to get sat on by Taylor Hunt this week? Is he going to get rains the week after? What happens in the Richmond game in round nine? Does he get Jackson? Does he keep on falling victim to these guys? Or what do you see the future being?
No, I think he'll be fine. I think it was just a case of lack of interest rather than anything else. And, you know, he'll bounce back this week and go back to about where he normally scores. He's a quality player and you know, the quality players like him don't have too many bad games in a row. And I think that's what it was. Just a little bit of upside in him if you think he can get back to where he was last year, but in Dream Team anyway. But yeah, I think he'll be fine.
All right, on the GWS side, Zach Williams is going to be on the bubble this week, but again, he's had two green vests, I believe, and has come on fairly late in both of those games. And although he did show in the Gold Coast game that he could score when he got on the park, because he managed a 46 in both of those in both competitions there. After actually, no. Now that I look at it, he didn't actually get vested in the first game. So okay, I'll take that back. But he did actually play a full game and still only scored 46. So again, he's another one I think, Molly, who we can forget about for this stage.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I think, you just hold off for him and look elsewhere.
All right, on the North Melbourne-Port Adelaide game, Molly, that was an interesting game if you were a North Melbourne supporter, especially because the free kick count was amazingly lopsided. It was like 35 to 8 or something along those at some point. I think Port managed to get a few late ones, but yeah, that was just an amazing game for the officiating in that game. We'll talk about the player I was going to mention in a second, but the one player who's interested me this week is Aaron Black. Now, of course, the structure there with Robbie Tarrant getting injured, Black has come in to be the second tall with Petrie as the first and Dorr as the third. So Black has come in and actually been pretty good. So I'm wondering, given that his price is still at only 200 in Dream Team and 212 in Supercoach, he's on the bubble this week with a break-even well into the minuses in both competitions. So he's priced at 40 in Dream Team and 43 in Supercoach. He scored, 70 in Dream Team and 85 in Supercoach, the average of his first 2 weeks. And the opposition he's been playing is not too shabby either. The Hawks and the Port, of course, who had been unbeaten going into that game. His bye coming up includes the Dogs, the Saints, and Gold Coast in next 3 of the next 5 weeks. So that's a pretty good draw, I would have thought. We missed out on talking about Brandon Ellis last week, but is Aaron Black similarly a player who no one's going to get, but is actually going to be a big money maker and starting option that in the age of 44 trades is actually a viable sort of halfway option between between the rookies that you start with and the premiums you end up with?
Yeah, well, I mean, he could be. He had a nice game against Hawthorn, and as you say, he's 200K starting price, got a break even of negative 15. He's a sly option. You're not going to make a lot of money with any of the forwards you're probably looking to get rid of, but perhaps he will kick on to a degree. If he goes on from there, he'll be in a lot more sides. And you know, as you say, with the 44 trades, I definitely think the idea of a two-step trade to a premium, if you can afford it, would work.
I would love to be able to be in position to trade someone like Shannon Burns down to Aaron Black, or maybe Sam Dwyer up at this stage. I'm not sure whether his price is about the same. I think you might actually be making money out of that. But, I mean, Black to me is a more startable option at this point than Dwyer or Burns is, even. We'll talk about at least one of those guys later in the show. But especially against the Dogs, I would expect him to score fairly heavily because a lot of players are scoring heavily against the Dogs, including what the Eagles did to them on the weekend. Also at North Melbourne, in the Supercoach competition this week, Molly, I brought in Scott D. Thompson because he does seem to be a bit of an umpire favourite. And so it proved on the weekend there was a particularly egregious example of favouritism towards SDT. There were many free kicks that I think Port fans were screaming about on the weekend. Well, there was one in particular that Thompson got that they were screaming about. But he does tend to attract the umpire's eye and get a lot of frees for. And, of course, that does help out your Supercoach scores. And, of course, he does get a lot of intercept marks which definitely helps your Supercoach scores. He's coming off that 164 against Brisbane in round four. That's his only ton of the year in both competitions, but I feel like he's a solid option, and I'm hoping he's going to be a keeper for me, Molly, in Supercoach. Do you think that I'm being obtuse in actually going for a genuine defender as opposed to a halfback flank, which pretty much every other back tends to be in fantasy competitions? Or is a genuine fullback like that, can he actually reach the top six even if it is in Supercoach?
I think he's going to find it tough. As you say, though, he has had a good start to the year, especially of recent time in Supercoach. You know, maybe he can, with the vagaries of Supercoach, get away with it, but it's going to be interesting what happens when they get into blowouts and tighter coverage during the year. So, yeah, I think he's one to think about, but yeah, I think the fullback nature of him with some of the teams he's got coming up, he's going to have a tough game against the Eagles. I guess he's got an easier game now against the Crows than what he would have, but then comes up against St Kilda. Yeah, it's a toss-em type one for me.
I'm just trying to remember. I believe I've just got this vague memory of his score against West Coast last year. Or I might be thinking of someone else who was supposed to be a big scorer in defence and then did nothing at all versus the Eagles. I can't remember who that was. Someone on the chat might be able to help me out, but it wasn't actually Thompson. But yes, you're right about the Eagles, but hopefully the score from the Dogs will cancel that out for this week. I'd expect him to smash... No, he wouldn't play on Jones, I'd imagine. That'd be Grimer. I suppose that's part of my reasoning as well, is that the rise of Grimer means that when you do have those mobile centre-half forwards, it will actually be Grimer who goes with those guys, and it'll be Thompson who plays on the last line and does the Brian Lake thing, I suppose. You might call it that sort of role. But anyway, that's something which hopefully you'll be a decent unique for me. But I actually got two uniques in Supercoach this week, the other one being... Harry Taylor, who we've talked about as well. I made the decision to take two genuine defenders because I believe not many coaches would have those guys, and I trusted those guys as your next, so we'll see how that one goes. On the Port Adelaide side, Molly, we talked last week about whether it was time to rack the Hoff, and it is certainly long past time to rack the Hoff, isn't it? There's no resurrection from here. He's crucified us all. And he needs to be put to sleep, I would have thought.
I don't know if I'd like to put it like that, but yeah, this is probably why a lot of people missed out on him. They felt this was coming, and it came. So, you know,
if you get a donut in somewhere else, it's so time to get rid of him that, I mean, he's scoring so poorly that even if you are eating a donut somewhere else, you'd still want to get rid of Westhoff at this point, wouldn't you?
Pretty much. Pretty much you'd be wanting to get rid of him. So, you know, he's got a 200 break even in both competitions. So this is why we didn't pick him this year, a lot of us. But if you did pick him up, it would be time to think to move on from him, I believe.
Mm. All right, also at Port, now another player who is not on the bubble this week, but his score from his first game, this is his third game this week, it has been his third game this week, Robbie Gray. So his break-even is 42 in Dream Team and 22 in Supercoach. He was going to be a mid-price unique in a lot of sides. He was in a lot of early sides before the news came out that he wasn't actually going to make round one. So he was actually vested, I believe, in the first game against Gold Coast. And maybe, I should have looked that up before the show, shouldn't I? I should look it up now. So yes, he was actually green vested in both of his first two games and came on in the third quarter in both of those games. And this was his first full game on the weekend, so an 80. So I'd see his development in terms of scoring, Molly, is somewhere similar to Lacroix in the sense that he'll get 80s like he got in that game on the weekend. Lacroix put out a lot of 80s this week, and then he's backed it up with 100s against some of the lesser sides. So I would hope that Gray could develop along those lines, and he is still fairly underpriced if he is going to be turning out 80s, because his implied average is about 55 in Dream Team and 60 in Supercoach. So I'd expect him to outperform that by at least 20, if not more than that, against some of the lower teams. I mean, he's got the Dogs and the GWS during the bye period, rounds 10 and 12. So given that he's definitely going to be starting for your side in that period, I would expect him to be able to deliver very decent scores when you need them during that bye period. So I like him, and his price is not going to get any shorter, Molly. So is this the week to get Robbie Gray in?
If you like him and you're willing to risk the injury worries, yeah, I think he's got the potential to be a really good player. He's well under his highest average at the moment, although last year he had trouble with injuries again and only managed a few games. So it's a possibility that he'll score very well. He's shown it before, and if you're willing to take a risk on the injuries, and especially since we've got the 44 trades, you can probably afford to do that a little more. He could be a good pickup for you.
I feel like, I mean, I'm trying to offer some alternatives if you haven't got the money or you don't want to spend the money on Dale Thomas. So Gray there is another, 140,000 in Dream Team, less than Thomas in Dream Team, and about the same in Supercoach. So these are the options if you are looking to upgrade in the forwards, like a lot of people are this week. Also at Port Adelaide, if you're looking for someone who is at the top of the roller coaster, Oliver Wines, to me, Molly, looks like he's just about at the top. He's pumping out 70s at the moment in 70s and 80s, and his break even is actually 84 in Dream Team and 66 in Supercoach. So he looks like his price has topped out. There were those 2 tons in games 3 and 4 against Adelaide and Gold Coast, but he's got the Tigers this week. The Tigers are, I believe that game is away. Let me see. No, it's home. It's at Adelaide. So he could probably make his break even or thereabouts this week. But after that, he's got the Blues and the Cats, which is a pretty tough record. So I don't know. Perhaps I'm talking up the Port schedule for Robbie Gray and talking it down for Oliver Wines, I suppose, Molly. So perhaps I'm maybe a bob each way. But I feel like Wines has topped out. He's matured, and probably it's time to move him on.
Possibly. I mean, I think he is a guy who you could slip into the first emergency spot and be quite happy with him. But also in saying that, the chance for him to get you some cash and stuff is also very a good one. But me myself, he's one of the guys along with Omira who I'd be looking to try and slip in as, you know, my last midfield spot on the bench, like as a backup.
All right. On the Adelaide Hawthorn game, Molly, now we could talk about Lynch again, who I believe we mentioned last week. He certainly lived up to the billing we gave him last week. But I suppose the player I wanted to go back to was Luke Brown, because I think a lot of coaches will be looking at Luke Brown and looking at his scores in the last, you look at his scores 3 of the last 4 weeks, he's been getting 16, 62, 20 and 36, so he's barely on the park at all in terms of fantasy scoring. However, he has got GWS this week, and then Sydney, and then St Kilda the week after. So I feel like even though he looks like he's topped out and his break evens in the 50s in both competitions, I feel like he could make that this week fairly easily. And given that it'll be the 20 and 23 that'll be rotating out next week, I think he's still got a bit of cash to make, and apart from anything else, a warm body is valuable in its own sense, given all the carnage in the back line, which continues this week with no Waters, no Gibbs, and many other players. I don't think Pittard's going to come up, so there's still problems aplenty in the back line, and I feel like Brown, as an emergency, even though he might only get you 50-odd, that is going to be better than nothing this week against GWS, and I'll personally be keeping him and looking elsewhere to get better options for a trade out.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary of it, and he does look like one of those rookies that could have a breakout game out of the blue. But yeah, I think you've put a good point there about, you know, is there other guys who you could trade him to, and if there isn't, then he's going to be someone fine to stand up to be in your side, and you know, hope that he'll stand up every now and again for you.
Mm. On the Hawthorn side of that game, Molly, first of all, I would like to apologise for putting the purple name game curse onto Grant Birchall. It was my fault. But also, I would also like to apologise for all of those, for those many thousand fantasy coaches, exactly how many, I shall look it up now, 38,000 Dream Team coaches and 26,000 Supercoach players have Sean Burgon in their teams, and I have completely ruined his fantasy scoring by trading him in this week in Dream Team. Now, let me explain. I believe he is reasonably... well, he is slightly overpriced, I suppose, if you're expecting him to average what he has over... You know, I mean, you can't really expect him to be averaging the 90s he was... or 95s, I believe it was, before this week. Nevertheless, I knew, having looked at his previous scores, that he was going to have a down week this week, but he's had two tons the last time he has played Sydney, who he's got this week, because they tend to play in pure midfield. So I'm not worried by him moving forward this week as a half a forward tagger, because I think he'll get shifted back into midfield, because I do like to play him against the Sydney midfield, because they know they like big bodies. And then, of course, after that, they've got GWS, Gold Coast and Melbourne, which is the greatest draw in the known universe, leading up to the bye in round 11. So he can't rest for all of those games. He's still going to be scoring through at least two of those games, I would have thought. So I knew I was probably getting him in a week early. I probably should have waited a week, but I certainly think that over the next month or so, he's going to be well outperforming even his price at the moment, which is 90 in Dream Team and 99 in Supercoach. I'll be expecting to pump out some 110s, 120s across those weeks. Are you with me on that one, or do you think I've just ruined him?
I don't know about ruining him, but he is a player who, by his very nature of the positions he plays and the like, is going to have up and down scores depending on what his role is for the day. And you know, I mean, lots of players have bad days, and, you know, that as well. So, yeah, I don't think you've ruined him apart from the curse.
Yes.
He's going to be a bit up and down on the roller coaster, but as that back eligibility comes in, most players, you know, have that option.
All right. Now, the next game we have is Richmond and Geelong, and of course we do need to talk about Nick Vlaston, Molly, because of course after the first game we were wondering whether he had a tank, because he scored about 47, I believe, in the first half, and got about 4 in the second half. Now, in this game he managed to play out a full game, and I obviously had a look at him a bit closer across the whole game, and he does look like the right type, Molly. He's got a big body. He looks like he belongs in the playing with men, because he's got a body almost like a grown man already, even though he's fairly young. So I would expect him over the course of the month leading up to the bye to put in some decent scores. Port this week, Melbourne, of course, in round 8, where I would hope that he would be able to put in a big performance to really kickstart his price gains. Essendon and the Eagles leading up to the bye, so probably not as good in those games. But by that time, hopefully that Melbourne score would have really kicked him along. So I would have thought he was just pretty much a lock in every serious fantasy side this week.
Yeah, I would have thought so as well. He's looking quite good. Starts off, so he's... I really like the look of him. They held him out. They didn't rush him in. That was one of the things that Richmond had in their favour this year compared to other years, where he had a chance to start off in the reserves and get a bit to know about this senior footy before he came in. And so he's looked pretty good since he came in, and he's got great fantasy relevance. Even at 147K, he's a good pickup.
I would expect him to play all the way through the bye period, including afterwards, because the bye period is going to be 6 weeks after he starts. That will affect the bye will effectively be his rest. I mean, he won't need to fall victim to the general soreness bug because he'll have that bye after 6 weeks. So now hopefully he'll be able to last all the way to those 6 weeks. But I would hope that, given the size of his body, that he'd be able to do that. So he could play every other game this season if his body stands up, which, as I said, he's got a better chance than the average draftee to do. So he looks like a lock. Now, speaking at, similarly to Luke Brown, Molly, on the Geelong side here, Mark Blickhavs has actually done what we were talking about with Brown and actually pulled out that... that rare high score amongst a litter of smaller ones. So he has posted his largest score of the year in round six. That's only the first time he's gone over 45 in Dream Team with a 65 on the weekend. So I suppose with the fact that a lot of us have got someone like, you know, people like Dan Curry, or you might have a someone like who's the Frio bloke that they have? Craig Moller. I noticed a lot of people have Craig Moller or Liam McBean for the purposes of moving a for having a ruck forward situation, you know, a dual position situation happening. So a lot of people's fourth rucks are not going to be playing through the bye period, and of course we are, you know, leading up to the byes, we do have to do a lot of bye planning. Thus, the third ruck has to be playing in at least two of those weeks to cover the other ruck who's going to be on bye. So, Blickhavs, you know, if it, I'm assuming that most serious teams would have him as their third ruck, but the question to me, Molly, is he actually going to play all the way through till round 13? Because McIntosh and Walker and actually, not Walker. I think Walker's on the long-term injury list now that I think about it. But the other one would be Caddy, I suppose, who's injured. And I suppose, I mean, the question would be, is Blickhavs playing well enough to actually hold those guys out of the team? Is he going to move back to second and it'll be West who's the one who gets dropped when those other players, McIntosh in particular, comes back into the team? How does it all work out through to... I mean, we have to look now 2 months in advance to rounds 11 through 13 because, if he's not going to be playing, we're going to have to look at players like Hannah this week who might actually be playing all the way through to the through the bye rounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good review of it. He's played pretty well, as you say. The price for the weekend's match means that his price is gonna still go up probably a little bit more. I just think these rookie rucks, unless you've got a really good reason to change them, just sit them down, hope that he plays most games. And I do worry that with some of those guys coming back, he's gonna get a rest. But yeah, he's just a good third ruck option to me, and will stay that way in my side for the rest of the season.
All right. Well, it just remains to be seen whether he actually get 22 games. I guess that's the unanswered question that only the Geelong hierarchy know at this stage. All right, we'll move on to the Gold Coast game. If I can just move the player list up there. Now, one of the players who I mentioned who came into the my WAG side this week, Molly, was Trent McKenzie. And actually, I sort of only half suggested him to my WAG because, of course, he had a silly name and she does like those silly nicknames. But he actually, after his 80 this week, backing up the 112-odd in the first game against GWS, is actually fantasy relevant because if he's going to be averaging 90s as he has across the first 2 weeks, given that he is priced at 73.5 in Dream Team and 72 in Supercoach, I mean, you look at that back line and you wonder who their best 22 would have as the three small defenders. And I suppose Campbell Brown, even though he's going to be coming in a couple of weeks, he'll be going back to the forward line, you'd imagine. Danny Stanley seems to be playing back and forward. Harbrow seems to be playing more midfield these days. So I think the McKenzie's position does seem like it is going to be in that back line. But I guess the question is whether he's going to be the one who's going to be scoring a lot of the points, because both he and Stanley have had decent games across the two games that they've played in the last 2 weeks. And just looking at the side as it was named, Dion Prestia and Stanley and McKenzie, you would imagine would be the small defenders. Broughton, of course, Mr. B. Broughton or Broughton? I can never remember, Molly. Is it Broughton or Broughton?
It's Mr. B.
So Mr. B is the one who is the lockdown small defender. Thomas Murphy has been playing taller recently, but he can, of course, play the lockdown small defender role. So McKenzie does seem to me like to be the creator from that half back line. So, but his hurt factor, I don't think at this stage is great enough for them to put a defensive forward on him. He hasn't really unleashed the cannon, is what I'm trying to say, Molly. And thus, you know, while he may be getting a ball a lot, I don't think he's dangerous enough for opposition analysts to start worrying about him just at this stage. So for Dream Team purposes, all this points to me to him having a pretty good year in terms of getting the ball. I'm not sure his super coach is going to be all that great. Scoring is not going to be all that great. He's actually scored less in super coach than he has in his Dream Team every year he's been in the competition. So that's a bit of a trend, I suppose, happening there. He's outscored in Dream Team by 4 or 5 points every year, and he's doing so again this year. So I feel like, as far as Dream Team goes, and for Supercoach, I suppose, his role is not going to change much, and that's actually a good thing because, you know, I don't see many risk factors with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the fact that Ablett runs back a lot of the time as well, that's going to help him. Harley Bunnell's been known to play a little bit back as well, so that'll help him as well. These are the guys they need to tag, not the McKenzies. I mean, there's Harbrow as well around the place. So, yeah, I think he can get a lot of time on his own. And, I think he could be a nice little pickup, as you pointed out earlier, a nice little sort of bridging player where you might be able to, you know, get some nice scores, get to the bye rounds, and then upgrade him to a premium.
Yep. All right, on the other side of that game, the Gold Coast Fremantle game, Hayden Crozier is on the bubble this week. He scored in 70 in Dream Team and 92 this week to go with the 52 and 85 he scored in back in round two. So obviously he's had those 3 weeks off. So his job security is not very good at the best of times, Molly. I don't believe he was injured in that game. So I can only presume that he was dropped for performance reasons because they had other players coming back in. So, I mean, if he gets named this week, his price is 175 in Dream Team and 219 in Supercoach. So he's priced at, you know, mid-30s, mid-40s in respectively. Has a fairly negative break-even, minus 14 in Dream Team, minus 45 in Supercoach. But job security, for me, is the issue, Molly, and the fact that, I mean, he is named as a forward, but I wouldn't expect him to be in the side and scoring, you know, week upon week like your Dwyers and McCaffers and Need and these sort of players. He's a bit of a different player, and I'm not sure he's going to be in the side, you know, given that kids like Lockie Neal probably need games as well, and they probably play a bit of the same sort of role. And Morabito will be coming back, I presume, later in the season as well, playing a similar sort of role. I just don't see his job security as being good enough, Molly.
No, I agree. The fact that he's had that break between the games is not a good sign as well, and they've got a tough draw for probably two or three of the next 4 weeks into the bye. So I think you're probably better off looking at other options in the forward line than he at this stage.
All right, and another player who is on the bubble, of course, is Jack Hanneth, Molly. Now, we know that Kepler Bradley is out for the season, and Sanderlands is out for most of the season. So they need someone to back up Griffin, and Clark is injured as well, I believe. So, yes, it does look like Hannah's short-term job security is pretty decent, but I guess the question is it going to last all the way through to round 13? Because, of course, he has the bye in round 11, being with Fremantle. Is he going to play in rounds 12 and 13? Because I feel like if you're going to be downgrading someone like Blickovs, even over the next week or so, next couple of weeks, I should say, as Blickovs' price tops out, by that time, Hannah's price might have got away on you, I suppose. So maybe this week is the week to actually take that cash. But the question is Hannah going to last all the way to rounds 12 and 13, where they play Brisbane and the Roos? Given that Sandilands, they probably don't want to rush him back, and there are so few other options. Do you think Hannah is actually going to last that long? It's a very vexed question, and there's no real, you know, one answer to me. It's just a bit of a guess at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I think hold off on him. Because, I mean, the other thing too is, correct me if I'm wrong, I know it is in Dream Team, and I think Super Coaches are the same. We just need 18 fit bodies for scores during the bye rounds this year. It doesn't matter what position they're in.
That's true. But if you look at it, Okay, the way that it's going to work is that you will assume, you know, for better or worse, that you're not going to play two rucks each week. So you're probably going to cop, well, not donuts, but at least you're not going to, you're going to have, out of the six possible ruck playing spots, you're only obviously going to play six at most. And so you really only need one. Your third ruck, so your fourth ruck doesn't really matter. So, as I said, so it'll be a choice between Dorr and Blickovs and Hanneth and Rowe. If you're hoping he plays on, we'll talk about him later on in the show. So it's a matter of which of those guys you actually think is going to be that third ruck for you. Now, if you have two of those guys already, well, you know, happy days. But a lot of us have only one of those guys, and so if that one guy doesn't work out, then we're going to be left with donuts across several of those weeks. So, or if they're not donuts, at least they're going to be really poor scores. We might have to eat a 20 from someone, or, you know, you might have to play a Luke Brown, and he'll give you 12 or something along those lines. You'd like to be able to avoid having to play those guys and to be able to cut out your worst score, because your worst score across the bye rounds is probably going to be a 20 somewhere, if it's one of your poor backs or your poor forwards or even your third ruck. So you'd hope to be able to maximise your options and have as many playing as possible, so that you could pick the best 18 amongst them rather than having just the bare 18.
Yeah, I understand that too, but I mean, I'm not sure that I'm going to go chasing scores with my ruckman, especially with the amount of injuries and the like we've got at the moment. So that probably means that Hannah isn't someone I'm going to be looking at. And, you know, unless you've got no other problems in your side, I wouldn't believe there'd be many in that situation with the injuries to guys like Stanton and the guys in the back line and the suspension. So I don't think you go chasing it in your ruck division just for the bye rounds. I think you can probably make a lot more better use of trades this time of year in other ways.
All right. We'll move on to the Sydney-Brisbane game. Molly, this wasn't really much of a game at all. Yet again, Sydney was allowed to play one quarter of football and then just cruise for the rest of the game. This happened about 4 weeks out of six for them, sadly, coming into the Hawthorn game. And yes, I am talking my own book there as a Hawthorn supporter. I'm a little bit annoyed at the relative strength of schedule that both of these sides have had leading up to the grand final. Leading up to the round seven. I, for some reason, I thought it was the grand final again because we've just had a very close game against Adelaide. We won, and I'm getting flashbacks, Molly. I don't know. It's very weird. Anyway, Sydney and Brisbane. So I've got Kieran Jack down here to talk about, but I suppose he's a bit of a proxy for the rest of the team. Because you might have Jack, or you might have McBay, or you might have Parker, you might have had even Josh P. Kennedy. I mean, perhaps Kennedy and Jack are the ones who you you'd quarantine from this. Maybe they're the only two you'd want to keep from that team, because Sydney's draw from here gets significantly harder. And if you were getting these guys for the on the strength of their fairly soft early draw, Jack and as I said, Kennedy might be the only two who you'd want to keep out of those mob, because you know Mumford and a lot of those other players have let you down over the course of several of those weeks. And I mean Kennedy, I would think he was more. I mean I've always considered Kennedy more of a Supercoach special, but Jack I think is on the cusp of whether you want to keep him or not, Molly. I mean I'm hearing some of his owners saying they want more firepower, they want to upgrade someone like Jack. I mean, I'm hearing a bit of this talk. Well, I was hearing a bit of this talk about Dangerfield before this week, of course. But I'm hearing that also about Jack. So do you think Jack owners need to upgrade him? Do they need to jack him up?
No, I don't think they do just yet. His break-even is still manageable. And he's about his average against the Hawks. I guess teams coming up, though, he's a bit below average compared to these teams. But, yeah, I think I would give him another week and see how he goes and then go from there, especially, you know, as per normal, if there's trouble elsewhere. But, yeah, if you had that spare trade, then... You know, he's at a pretty high price to get you towards some of the premium players. So, you know, you might take advantage of that now.
Mm. All right, on the other side of that game, Molly, it did look in the first quarter like players like Dane Zorko, Sam Mays, Rowan Buick. It looked like they were going to be putting up some single-figure scores because I think Mays only had one handball to very close to half-time, and Maloney was the same, and Rockliffe was the same. I think Hanley was really the only premium who started out of the blocks like a premium should. But Zorko, I suppose, is the one who I'm looking at as a bit of a proxy for the rest of the side, Molly, who did underperform on the weekend. But he did, of course, Zorko did get that big score against Melbourne the previous week, but his break-even is still fairly high. Are those who brought him in last week, do they get back out of him now? Should they be worried? I mean, I suppose the question I'm asking, Molly, is all of those coaches who brought in Brisbane players based on their Melbourne form, do they panic again based on the Sydney form? What's the midpoint for these guys? I mean, are they going to be scoring like they did in that Sydney game? Are they going to get spanked like they did in that Sydney game by a lot of sides this year? I mean, they're coming up against the Eagles this week in the corresponding game last year they actually won. Do they actually do that again this week, or do they get spanked again by these top teams? I mean, they're going to be playing the Eagles, the Dons, the Blues, and the Pies, who are all gunning for top four this year, or at least the Eagles should be. Is Zorko going to be scoring 60s every week for the next month?
Well, as I said to you, there was a feeling that he scored well against the good sides, but, yeah, you look at that draw, it's terrible. It's a terrible draw for them. Because, I mean, even if you go, well, let's get him through to the bye, then after the bye it goes Fremantle, Geelong and Hawthorn. It's like nearly the top eight contenders in, if you look at, if you're in Melbourne there, it's the top eight contenders in 10 weeks. And it's just really hard for them. So I don't have a lot of confidence in Zorko myself at the moment. I think he needs to earn that confidence again. So I wouldn't be bringing him in. I'm not sure if you can trade him after 1 week, but Yeah, you just have to pray that the theory that he plays well against the good sides, or at least scores well against the good side, returns.
All right, a couple of other Lions players. Nick, given your attitude towards Zorko, I'm not sure whether I should praise these guys. But anyway, I'll push on because Ryan Lester is on the bubble this week. Now, he's another player who played back in round two and then had 3 weeks out and only played again in round six. Nevertheless, he is priced at about 60-odd in both competitions and has scored, 92 is average in Dream Team and 120 in Supercoach. So he's had two big tons, especially in Supercoach, when he's actually played, Molly. So, I mean, there are usually a lot of points in the Brisbane backline, and I shudder to say it because I get picked on for this phrase. It's a bit of a catchphrase of mine, apparently, Molly, the Drummond role. Is Ryan Lester playing the Drummond role? Because we know the Drummond role is so lucrative. Okay, so I'm perhaps being a bit silly there. Sorry,
so is the Drummond? Do you mean the Drummond role of being the quote unquote quarterback, or the Drummond role as in being injured every week?
Now you say that, but yeah, look, someone else made that joke. That's a similar joke to me this week because I was telling them that Luke Bruce was playing the Cyril Rioli role, and they said, "What? He's going to get injured." Yeah, so yeah, that's a bit of a big footy move, Molly, I'll have to say. But anyway, the Drummond role, the quarterback role, I suppose, yes. Well, that role really has been played, I suppose, by Hanley, if there is such a thing in the Brisbane structure these days. That really is Hanley's role. But nevertheless, you can't argue with those numbers, and even though people might not have liked Michael Evans, or Justin Westhoff, and they may not have really liked what they, may not have thought it was going to last, but the break-even, you look at Leicester's break-even, it's -3 in Dream Team, and a massive -45 in Supercoach. So he's costing you, I mean, maybe this is a Supercoach-only question, I suppose, so he's costing you 327 in Supercoach, which is an implied average of 66. Does he keep scoring well above, 50 points above 66? I mean, do you get him just for the cash injection? Or, I mean, is he actually not going to make that anywhere near that for the rest of this, for the month coming up to the bye?
Well, I mean, the fact that you are sort of guaranteed a cash injection and the fact that we have a few guys in the back line that are going to miss this week, he may be a sneaky little guy to bring into your side and hope that he can score well for you to cover a guy like a Gibbs and a Goods if you're looking at that. So, I think there is some validity in him, which sort of is a bit funny after the comments about Zorko, but I think he's been targeted a lot more and in positions where there's better options. But the back line at the moment is a bit decimated. So, you know, you could do a lot worse than give Lester a go and see if he can continue on for a week. But it is a little bit risky.
Heavy in the chat says, well, maybe if we had two trades each week in Supercoach, I presume you mean. So, yes. Although, I mean, I feel like, especially in the first half of the season, I don't think things have really been all that different in Supercoach because I've burned two trades every week, and I think a lot of other people would be anyway, because we're assuming that, the difference between the two, 44 versus 30, is really going to be felt in the second half of the season regardless, I suppose. But anyway, the other line I wanted to speak about was Justin Clark, who was on the bubble. He's another one who I think we can pretty much ignore because he's a key position defender, and he got smashed by Sam Reed in that game, and so I presume that he's being blooded, and he definitely had blood everywhere in terms of his performance because he got slaughtered. So he looks like he's, at least at this stage, too raw and probably should be playing back in the kneeful at this stage, Molly.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's about right. And, he's stay away.
All right. Now, speaking of tall rookies, get on to the Carlton-Melbourne game. Now, of course, Sam Rowe owners had to watch, of course, as Jared Waite replaced Rowe in the team this week, up after both being named on the extended interchange. But, of course, Waite got suspended this week. So, I guess presumably that means that Rowe gets one more week of playing in the side, and they have, I think it's St Kilda this week, Molly. So I guess the question is, Sam Rowe, do you actually play him this week against St Kilda? Because there's a lot of players in that forward line like Need and Dwyer and McCaffer, perhaps even Burns, who a lot of people will still have, I suppose, who you might actually not play ahead of Rowe because Saints are getting smashed by a lot of teams, and I would expect Carlton to be no different, to really put them to the sword. So do you actually start Rowe this week?
Oh, I think that would be a bit risky. There may be value in it, but I think that's a huge risk. I mean, if you've got guys of quality in the ruck line, I guess I've originally thought, but I guess that, you know, the forward line maybe, but yeah, I think still a bit risky to play him. He's doing a nice job for you, and if you've got him as a backup ruckman, then you're doing nicely, but yeah, just a little bit too risky at this point in time. Mm.
I mean, I watched the St Kilda game, and Reece Stanley had an absolute mare at fullback, and they don't seem to want to play Fisher at fullback for obvious reasons, because he's probably a bit too slow for players who'll beat him on the lead. But yeah, they really don't have much in the way of cattle down there at St Kilda, so I would expect. I mean, Carlton didn't really put Melbourne to the sword as much as they could have in that game. You look at the numbers there, and they were remarkably even. I mean, we maxed out on Blue Talk last week through talking about all those midfielders. It turned out the correct answer for this week was Kane Lucas was the big winner in terms of over his price. I mean, Mark Murphy was the only one who got the big DT ton, but Lucas, given his price, the fact that he got a ton was pretty good. And it was Brock McLean who was the surprise loser out of all of that. But anyway... on the Melbourne side of that game, Molly, is it time to ice the Burns? Because he looks like he might have hit the wall, as similarly to what Westhoff did a couple of weeks ago. After a couple of very good scores by Burns, he was nowhere in that game, and looked like he was going to be delivering a sub-20. He managed to scrape and crawl towards 40 in that game, only 28 in Supercoach, indicating that most of his numbers came in deep in junk time. So is it time to get him out of sides this week?
Just looking, he's got the Gold Coast this week, so it's going to be real tempting to keep him for another week. His break-even 65 and 86 in the different competitions is around his average so far. So, you know, you're going to be very tempted to move him on, but you know, if you've got other concerns, I would not be as worried about holding on to him for at least one more week to see how he goes against Gold Coast. If you need to make trades elsewhere,
would you be starting him over the likes of McCaffer, Need, and Dwyer, and a lot of those other forward rookies?
Yeah, I would be at the moment, especially up against the Gold Coast.
Mm. And also in that Melbourne side, I was reminded this week that Jack Viney came back. I thought everyone would have got rid of him by this stage, but he's still in 41% of Dream Team and 51% of Supercoach teams. So this is a very fantasy relevant question. He looks like his price is just about topped out, because now admittedly he is also playing the Gold Coast this week, and that score from the GWS game where he was the sub is rotating out of his price after this week. So hopefully if he scores it decently in that Gold Coast game, then that will restart his cash generation. But so, I mean, maybe those who traded him out after round four, where he obviously was dropped the next week, maybe we all got off him a bit too early. So I presume the majority of his owners have actually held on to him, but how long do you expect the Viney train to go for?
Oh, look, I think he's going to be up and down most of the season. So I think it's time to get out of him from a fantasy point of view. I think a lot probably did when he missed the game, made him an easy option to trade out. But yeah, he's not going to make you a lot of money from here on in. I wouldn't have thought. We had some question marks on him, during the preseason about his DT ability, not his footy ability. So, yeah, I think it's time to try and get out of him and into one of the better moving players in the that are around that point at the moment.
All right, speaking of players who we might want to get out of, Callum Sinclair. Now, it's not necessarily about his own form, but the fact that Nick Natanui, of course, if you were watching the Fox Footy coverage, you would not fail to have noticed that Nick Natanui was playing because, of course, Jared Healy just loves him like a stepchild. And I think it was pretty much a Nick Natanui camera placed on him for the second half of the game, and everything he did was applauded by most of the crowd and also the commentators' boxes. But I presume that Nick Natanui will not get the vest next week, and thus Sinclair will probably, his job security is pretty much nil at this point, assuming that neither Cox nor Natanui get injured at training this week. If he does get dropped this week, Molly, I think now is the time to get out of Sinclair, surely.
Yeah, I think his run's gone. He did very well for you. I guess the fact that he's got a little break-even means it's not urgent. If you've been using him in your rucks, then it's not urgent because you can just sit him there, and if he ever gets back, then you've got that, although you could try and cash him out to get some easy cash if you've got no troubles elsewhere. So if you've got him in the rucks, nothing urgent. But, yeah, it's probably time to start thinking about elsewhere if you've got him as a forward.
Yeah. I mean, he's in 8% of sides in both competitions, and I think him out for Hannah this week is a no-brainer if you're able to make that trade. As far as the Bulldogs go, I don't really want to talk about any Bulldogs, really. I mean, maybe Matthew Boyd. I mean, I'm not sure whether he's actually going to recover this year. He was certainly very quiet in that game. I think he's got the ruse this week, and he's got a break even of 155 in Dream Team and 133 in Supercoach. I would be holding off on him, I presume, and waiting until the Gold Coast game.
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. And I think the interesting one for it is, I know myself, I got Tom Liberatore in when he sort of looked like he was going places.
Yep.
So I think I'm wondering at some point whether there's going to be a nice, easy, you know, when Boyd, if Boyd sort of gets back to being Boyd, whether there'll be an opportunity to jump across from Liberatore to Boyd and whether that's going to work out for me. So that's one I'm keeping an eye on.
Well, yeah, just looking at Liberatore. So the Dogs have got, as I said, North, Gold Coast, St Kilda and Port leading up to the bye. So that's actually a pretty decent run, I would have thought. So I don't know, maybe I'd keep Liberatore around because he's the sort of player who can score 120s against that sort of opposition. I mean, he did against Brisbane in the first game and also against Frio when Frio were playing over in Victoria. So he has shown that he can score those big scores against teams that aren't doing as well. But anyway, that's up to you. I'll be interested to see what you do, but that's something which we can keep an eye on over the next course of the next month. That will be it, I think, for this week for the Coach's Box. I thought it was going to be a short show, but it's ended up being an hour and 10, so just shows how much we can rabbit on this show, Molly.
We can.
Yes. All right. As I said, I will be running the Capstar competitions on the forums this week. But you can, of course, go to the Capstar website and use the code FANFOOTY10 to get 10% off all new era AFL caps. So do that and support the FANFOOTY, the Coach's Box sponsors. And, of course, Molly's just got caps from here to Timbuktu. He's just, the bling and the swag. You just got it all over the place. And yes. All right. As I said, that'll be it for this week for the Coach's Box. And we shall see you guys next week. Thanks, Mol.
Okay. See you guys. Bye.